So feel free to mess it up and just choose a page for yourself. Any page. Fancy. And the task is just to cut out a couple of questions that really stand out to you. So it might be questions that really jar you, or questions that you find really interesting, or that just stand out in some way. You do have permission to look.
Questions, yeah.
You do have permission to look at another bit of paper if you want to, but it's so easy to get overwhelmed with this stuff. So
yeah, quite good just to...
Yeah.
Just questions you're wanting, aren't you?
Yeah, just questions. A bit of paper.
Just a little bit of paper, thank you. Thanks. Thank you. Okay.
find yourself wanting to cut them all out? Or not?
No.
So it's easy to be selective?
I think questions are quite interesting because they're very much in the context of the interview, aren't
yes.
they?
So some of them don't make sense if you
yeah.
don't know the context.
Yeah.
Wait for Jane, but if you just keep your cut-out bits to one side so you can come back to mm-hmm. the sheets mm-hmm. that you cut mm-hmm. from. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we could have done it, couldn't we? Mm-hmm. Played around.
But we should have had a team meeting.
Yeah,
really.
Yeah.
It's the first time I've got to do anything with the data.
I think I've been doing it with the 11 team.
Yeah.
And a bit with the Proud Trust we did together.
I'm just thinking that, oh no, you've already cut them on either.
I used to do that, aren't I? I think.
These are all from early on in the interview. I think you asked different questions. I think what you can say at the beginning is different from what you can say. Just in case Jane's got sidetracked, maybe we'll just start doing the next thing and then she can join us. So what I was thinking is that we could have a go at re-asking the questions to each other. Mm. In pairs. And of course we can choose whether or not we want to answer them, or answer them however we want. So practice consent in how we do this. Who'd like to have a go at either asking or being asked?
Kind of interested, because the ones that I've chosen might be a bit oddly fragmentary.
Mm, but that's the whole point,
okay,
isn't it, I think.
Yeah, great.
Do you want to have a go asking?
Should we ask? If there's just
go
three
around.
Of us.
Yeah.
What do you think?
Yeah. Go on then.
I'll start. Okay. Do you feel like you're the lucky one then?
Oh, I think I am lucky in lots of ways, yes. I think I have fair amounts of social privilege on my side, which is a form of luck. And I think I am lucky in a lot of the people I know in my life who are the people who make me who I am, and I sometimes think if I hadn't had the relationships like with people that I have, then I wouldn't be the person I am. I wouldn't be able to do the things that I do. So I feel pretty lucky in like the people I've been able to know and be close to, and the opportunities I've had all like carved out to do things. So yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Okay. How do you get on with your dad? I mean, talking a lot about your relationship with your mum, is it as close as with your dad?
Yeah, my relationship with my dad much closer than with my mum. Though I don't suppose I would have talked particularly with my dad about, or with my mum actually, about relationships, probably not. So that was quite secret, perhaps. But I think with my dad, I shared the same kind of humour. And so I think if I was really upset, the person I would have gone to would have been my dad. Yeah, so a much closer relationship with my mother. So my mother had more kind of aspirations for me in a particular way. She would like to have seen me nicely married to, presumably, somebody useful, like a vicar or, you know, somebody sensible. I could live in a house in the country and live a bit of Downton Abbey kind of life. Whereas my father was much more encouraging of me to be educated and go to university and do what I wanted to do. So I think it was that kind of tension. Well, I mean, did you get any pleasure out of it at the time?
At the time? I think I was very fortunate to enjoy a lot of pleasure.
That's good.
I think my experiences in my younger life were pretty fortunate. And I can remember sort of chatting with girlfriends, and I am talking about sexual relationships because this is the context. Yeah, so I feel like I had sort of fairly luckily, and it does feel like luck in a way, kind of positive experiences, because I think most folk that I know chatting about early experiences, you know, maybe it wasn't so much about pleasure, there was sort of more about maybe fitting in or I'm not quite sure, because that's going into speaking with somebody else. But yeah, I think so. And I feel lucky for that.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. Keep going.
I'm going to skip around. Right, so it wasn't something you were scared to say to him.
I think if we're talking about heterosexual relationships, I think there have been many things I have been scared to say to male partners. Yes, because I think I find it very hard to be assertive in heterosexual relationships. I still think that's something that I find difficult on the personal level, so I might be able to challenge more of it in a more like public professional way. But I think still around personal and like intimate relationships, I wouldn't use scared, not in the terms of fear. I don't think I've ever felt fearful, but like more nervous or apprehensive or just conflict avoidance. Heaps, yes. So we're going around in a circle, James.
Yeah, sorry, I knew if I stepped out of the room.
It's fine.
It'd be a disaster.
Do you think it's embarrassing to have to bring the subject of contraception up?
Am I answering as me?
It's you.
I have to be somebody else.
No.
Do I think? No. Well, never that simple, is it?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm so thinking this on so many different levels. So in terms of me in relationships, I hope I've booked in here. I probably booked a completely different room. Let me just check with Stephen. Somebody else will have to go.
Sorry. Do you think it's embarrassing to have to bring the subject of contraception up?
No, I don't think so. When I was in a heterosexual relationship, I think for me it was really important because I always wanted to have children, but I knew I didn't want to get pregnant, if that makes sense. It was something about I want to be in control of this. So it didn't worry me about having a baby. But I didn't want to have a baby when it felt problematic.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think I've always been very interested in that whole debate about contraception. And I never really took the pill because it didn't suit me at all. So I've had to really talk to male partners in quite a kind of imaginative way. But if they, you know, particularly stuff about condoms is still very tricky, I think. So, you know, I think you have to kind of negotiate that the whole thing. And I was also talking to a friend of mine about the fact that when we were young, because it was hard to get contraception then, and because people were perhaps aspiration in that way of wanting to go to university, wanting to do something, not to have a baby, people had to really think about how they were having sex and pleasure without those kind of risks. So actually, I was talking to a friend of mine, another woman, and we were talking about the fact that actually we had lots of sex without penetration, and that was the... So there was something about actually very young understanding about pleasure and about the fact that it wasn't all about penetrative sex. And I think for men that's quite... it's not challenging because there are lots of things you can do, but, you know, it's an interesting conversation. Yeah. Well, I'm asking one now. Right, so what point do you think you have to make a decision about? I mean, do you think it's, you just have to say, well, what the hell, and take the chance? Or do you think you say, let's have a test?
What a brilliant question.
So I think it's really about having a test about HIV. When do you think you have to make a decision about, are you going to see if your partner, if your partner is HIV positive?
Yeah.
Or are you just going to say, well, you know, fancy the pants off this one, so I'm going to go for it.
It sort of feels like it's part of this similar question there about embarrassment and when. Yeah. And, I think I rely on humour in sort of like, but in trying to be very straightforward, I feel like one of the only ways that I can do very straightforward is almost be a more blunt persona than I really am.
Yeah, yeah. I agree.
It's like, wow.
Yeah. Yes. Oh, I really get it.
And I feel like it's the only way that I can do it, because a bit of me is still really, really embarrassed. So I was raised in a Catholic tradition where we were told that you only had sex if you were kind of intending to conceive a child. Sex for pleasure was And so all this stuff around contraception, I think, I don't know if the embarrassment is still from that, or whether that's just universal. But I wonder if some of it's around that. At what point do you have to make a decision about? I mean, do you just think you have to say, what the hell, and take the child, or do you think you'd have to take, let's have a test? I mean,
so I mean, in a way, that could be about contraception as well, couldn't it?
Yeah.
Because it could be, am I just going to go for it? If you're talking about heterosexual sex, or
So I tend to ask people, so how do you handle blah blah blah? You know, do you go and get checked out? I do this. What do you do?
Yeah.
And that's like my way into having the discussion. Not that that's always particularly super easy.
Because what's interesting about this question is, I would imagine these days people are not having that discussion about gonorrhea or syphilis. Right. Are they? Yeah. I don't know.
Can I just hold off the discussion?
So your turn now.
Is that sort of normal in terms of your friends and people you know? Is that sort of the average level?
I mean, it's always been hard to know what's normal, right? So as a researcher, I would say we'll use the NATSAL, you know, the National Search Attitudes and Lifestyle. That tells us what's, you know, about patterns of how often people have sex and who they have sex with. But yeah, it's interesting for me at the moment. So I'm at the age where most of my friends have got young kids. So the conversations now is about, is it normal to have this little sex when you've got young children? So it's interesting that that's kind of come up again as a thing, and that's not been a thing for a while. So it's funny, like the points in a life course when
what's normal becomes important again. I think it's always there in the background, but I think there are these like pinch points around like first sex and early sex. And maybe from the work we've been doing with the university students, it sounds like at university, how much sex you have as a university student is now quite a thing, which it wasn't really when I was a university student. So I think, yeah, there are like moments when what's the normal level or the right amount of sex to be having becomes like important again, and then I get, think maybe it eases a bit. So, and I guess some people care more than others about what's normal. So, I mean, the thing about contraceptives, do you think you could ever look on them as sexy things? I mean, something that is fun and part of, you know, the whole.
That's quite a good one. I think because when I did sex ed, I used all the contraceptives as a way of doing the education. So they were quite handy that they were things. And I always think about Dawn French's sketch and the slinky and all that kind of stuff. So I always kind of look at things and picture Dawn French really in the bus stop describing the coil as a slinky with barbed wire added and stuff like that. But I suppose in an abstract way, yeah, as for me personally, I don't use them because I've been a lesbian since mid-20s. And I have to say at that point, I was like, hallelujah.
Yeah.
I have not got to use contraception. If I could have stuck a flag out and said, oh, I'm so relieved. I think at that point, I'd just gone and had a cap fitted. So I'd left home, gone on the pill, because I didn't answer the earlier question. I think I just avoided contraception. I made it very internal. I just went and did it. And then I didn't have to negotiate it with anybody.
Was that pre-AIDS then?
1982, yeah. So yeah, that's just, I hadn't really thought about that. I had not made that. But I don't think we'd had any kind of education or anything at school, so God knows how I knew what I was doing, other than my fact that my dad had recently set up his own kind of company. No, he hadn't, I think, before that. He'd gone to work, basically, for the drug companies that make the pill.
Oh, wow.
So it was a standing joke that in our garage, for some reason, I don't know why they'd be in our garage. boxes of contraceptives. I don't know why he had them in the garage, because that doesn't make any sense at all, and I must go and ask him, because he did set up his own business later, but I don't think maybe he had at that point, anyway. And at that point, I think, or just before, he'd worked for what they call Pill Palace, in Burgess Hill in Sussex, which is where Organon, I think, and another drug company were that made a lot of the pills at that point. So I kind of knew it vaguely from him, but I don't remember ever learning anything about it at school, so I think I kept it very internal. I've forgotten the original question.
Could you look on contraceptives as sexy things?
Well, I don't have to, do I? So I can just think, I don't have to have anything to do with them. I mean, I can use condoms, and that's fine. The cap was beyond me. I'm not sure I could ever kind of get my head around that. And I was literally relieved that I didn't have to negotiate it all. I was relieved, actually, to be away from those power dynamics with men. Really, you know, I had two boyfriends. I was really good at it. I was so clever. Just had one, and then I had another one while I was working out. That was whilst discussing with my friends that obviously girls were better looking. Literally had a conversation with my best friend. No, well, obviously girls are better looking, but you go out with boys. Oh, my posters were girls.
That's such an interesting thing.
I know, I had a full year when I was about 22 going, God, I'd really like to be a lesbian. Like I was saying, I'd really like to be Jamaican. It's like, literally. But I think it was a real safety thing. And then I sort of went,
Wow.
But yeah, but funnily enough, it was two things when I came out. It was, apart from the kind of, it was the not having to use contraception, and also just feeling relieved, a bit like you were saying about not being scared of men at all. I had really nice sort of boyfriends, but yeah, just thinking that whole world of men was a little bit of a challenge, and actually I didn't have to do that anymore.
Thank you.
Oh, sorry, I was just looking expectantly at you. Okay, listen. Were there things that people told you that you can remember that really weren't right? You know, things that were ...
I think when I was young, I was probably quite like you. I kept things very... I didn't talk about things very much. I'm a talker, but I didn't talk about that. I made sure I found out what I wanted to know. There were some things. That's what I feel about when you talk about sex with young people. They quite often say, yeah, we know But actually, it was all, I can remember being, I don't think the word's confused, but it was like a mystery, wasn't it? It was like something that people didn't really tell you. Mm. So I think when I was young, I didn't feel that people told me things that were not true. But I don't know whether the things I read, because I made sure I bought magazines like, would be things like Cosmopolitan or Honey or those early magazines, and I made sure I really read them to know what I was, you know, because there were no, I mean, we're talking about the late 60s, so there wasn't a lot around, really, unless you were married or you were very proper. But then when I became a youth worker, there were lots of things girls told me. I was like, oh, you know, oh, gosh, like... my favourite is you. We could try. Well, you could try it now. You young people that are fertile. You don't get pregnant if you have sex while you're standing on a telephone directory, and that made me laugh because I thought, well, it'd be quite hard to have sex standing on a telephone directory.
It is these days because you have to find a telephone.
Yeah, exactly. It's probably a really good. Yeah.
That's a good method of contraception.
Yeah. I will sleep with you when you bring me back.
The BT, telephone directory. So it's those kind of things that, you know, you sometimes think, how do people believe it? But they obviously do. Well, I just met a woman up in Harper Hay, and she said, well, I did it up the alley. I haven't said that to Neil and Murray because that probably would make them think about something else. But anyway, they... I did it up the alley, she said, because people had said to her, the old, you know, the old chestnut, if you do it standing up, you won't get pregnant. Mm. So, you know, I mean, she was 85, I think, but I'm sure that's still going, doing the rounds. Mm. Yeah. Carry a telephone directory wherever you go.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Oh, question. Right, but I mean... How about the idea? I mean, do you see yourself as a Christian and living by those rules or anything?
Wow. How interesting. No, but of course I did. I was young, and suddenly all of this is just really making her come back. No, I don't. And I think that... in fact, recently I did a thing where I sort of wrote out, I tried to remember sort of a lot of the attitudes that were kind of put into my head about what sex was and what it was for and what it was not for, and what was sort of, whether it was spoken or not, what was approved of or disapproved of through facial expressions or what got switched on or off on the telly or all of those things. And a lot of it was kind of like expressions of female sexuality that was joyous got switched off or turned down or like, you know, disapproved of. And I feel like a lot of those things went into my bones as a young person. But some part of me managed to resist that. So what is it? So that says Christian, doesn't it? So I'm thinking specifically that I think that some of my stuff come from the Catholicism stuff. Mm-hmm. Some of those attitudes were around, you know, sex is only for conceiving a child. But then when someone did conceive a child, if it was outside of marriage, even though this was like, you know, the 90s, like I can remember a friend of mine getting pregnant in school, and then we just didn't see her anymore. And it's kind of like, and we didn't go and find her. Yeah. And I feel bad about, I mean, nothing bad happened to her, she just kind of stayed in and didn't come to school anymore and all of that stuff, blah blah blah. Where was I going? And so I wrote out my own stuff now, which is that about, which was more about sex being about joy and about connection and about generosity of spirits between people and being yours, you know, not for someone else to tell you what it could be. So I'm going to say no. Thank you.
So I'm going to suggest we stop asking. Thanks for working, everybody. Mm. So how did you find that process, just doing that?
It was interesting because I picked really fragmentary questions, because I'm not very smart and I didn't anticipate us asking them to each other.
Yeah,
I was feeling sort of weirdly guilt feelings about not picking more structured or clear questions, I suppose. I picked ones that sort of seemed to be a bit poetic to me in some way. I thought it was amazingly generative, and even just with one question, I found myself just going, well, let's just all have this one and just talk about it for an hour.
It made me think about what a good focus group method it is. Because like it needs to be, like it feels like a really safe space in here to me, so it would need to be that. But you know how like some people control the airwaves, like that kind of
that go around.
Doing, because we were going to do it in pairs, but because you'd popped out, that's why we did it like that. But actually, everybody it stops you in your tracks, and then you have to switch over to being the question, the interviewer. But it meant that everybody has a chance to share, and the sort of it's a bit arbitrary. What if I just read you whatever question comes next? So you're not like, oh, I'm going to choose like a good lesbian question for Jane or anything like that. Just like, I'm just, you know, whatever's next on you is coming. And then there's something about that. I really like it.
I thought it was really interesting.
And
things came out. And the questions were a bit random, weren't they?
Yeah.
So because we didn't know that's perhaps what we've been doing.
I mean, I think that's in some ways quite nice.
You're not preempting too
much. Yeah, exactly. Because I think if you'd said, you know, what questions, like if you'd explained it, then you might have censored questions.
Yeah,
like,
absolutely.
Oh, that's a bit awkward. Yeah. Someone won't want to answer that. But if it's just what's interesting or what's jarring, then you just choose what's interesting and then you deal with it. And it was also interesting that, like, if part of this project is like, if we work with this stuff, do we end up answering questions about social change? And in some ways, I felt like if we'd kept going, we'd get more and more, because particularly from you both, but I think you were as well, talking about like being in the 90s, and like we all just start to like position ourselves in terms of historical periods and think about them. So just started to kind of like catch. So it's like you don't need to ask about social change; it just kind of comes through the process, which is really interesting for me.
Yeah, because we had a good range of decades, I think, didn't we? So that's quite handy.
I mean, I've always been very interested in contraception. I would like to talk much more to the young women about contraception, because you know it's something I feel very. Because of course it's not now a moral panic, as far as I can see, about young women having babies, because they're all bunged up the gills with chemicals. And that makes, you know, that seems to me to be something very troubling for me personally.
Well, it's not questioned, is it?
It's not questioned
at all. It's just like, this is what you do. You don't think about what's in them. You don't think about the impact.
And I think we don't know, do we, what's going to happen in 20 years or 30 years.
Well, I can remember the first pill I went on, then changing the dose after a few years, because they then had done more research and recognised that it was much too high. And I can remember at the time thinking, oh shit, great. You know.
But nobody even questions it.
No, I know. Well, that's what happened when I was working in sexual health, because they started talking about it. This was probably 15 years or something like that. I was thinking, hang on a minute. I'm sure we were campaigning. I'm sure this wasn't a good thing.
We were campaigning.
Yeah.
We were campaigning. Yeah. Because I was going to do an MA on it. And I remember Janet Batsley said to me it'd be very hard to do that because the drug companies would just close down.
It's what Ali Hambury's PhD is on, isn't it?
No, hers is on the thing for cervical cancer.
HIV.
Well, she might have done, but her main thing was about the injection. Because again, the vaccine, girls just have that routinely. Are you allowed to say no?
Yeah.
You are, but it's very, my kids have not had it, and it's very hard for them to say no, because they're really going against the...
And do we know, I don't know enough about it, but I'm so suspicious.
Only on the girls. They've now brought it out for the boys, but I think that's partly because people complained.
I'm so suspicious of all these things, you know, that seem to me about... It's not so much about controlling sexuality anymore, or people's, you know, having sex. It's something about, we don't mind what you do as long as you don't have a baby, do you know? Mm-hmm. And we don't care what we do to your body, do you know, as long as you don't make it complicated by having...
Although they are still judged by having babies, so if they do have babies young, this was probably
it's still terribly
about seven or 8 years ago. I did a self-esteem project with groups 42nd Street, and they, the Young Mums group, because it was specifically about bodies, that was really interesting, because they were saying we couldn't celebrate our bumps at all.
Really?
And to that, and actually our bumps made us kind of, you know, people then knew that we were pregnant, so people would, random people would come up to them in the street, have a go at them.
No.
Yeah, people they didn't know, you know, call them names, all that kind of stuff. And it was interesting, actually, because I hadn't, I think my kids were relatively young then. And as an older mum, I'd been like, excellent. Well, I really noticed actually things like, A, I could kind of celebrate it because it had taken me ages to figure out how to have a baby and then to get pregnant. So I was really up for, you know, being visibly pregnant. So I really, really thought, God, and you're not being allowed this at all, because not only are you not allowed to be visibly pregnant, you're also then
judged.
Harassed when you are. But also, at the time, there was, I think it still exists, there was the Care to Learn grant.
Yeah. It doesn't exist.
So, which was great. So the idea being, you know, that if you had a baby when you're younger, then you can get money and go to college and get childcare. And in Stockport, they employed somebody to help the young women navigate that. Mm-hmm. And actually, she needed to, because it was really complicated. Mm-hmm. And the kids would get the babies into nurseries, and then the baby would be ill, and so then they wouldn't go back, so they'd be a bit embarrassed. Mm-hmm. And then the nursery would be really pissed off with them. And so she actually did loads and loads of advocacy, really, for the young women. But I remember thinking, but I can choose to be off on maternity leave, because I'm older, and and for them it's seen as good to not be off on maternity leave and go back into
like the choices. It used to be my job to sort out people's Care to Learn, and I never thought that before. I just thought it was brilliant.
Yeah, well, it was in itself.
They could get funded. Yeah, but it's really true.
But they lost that choice. Yeah.
Yeah.
No. Well, I worked in the office with all of
you. Because
it was
only until 19 as well. So if you had a baby at 18, you need to crack on with getting into education. It's only free until 19.
That's it. Yeah. Mm.
You don't get like an extra year if you had a baby.
That's true.
Yeah, that's really true.
Yeah.
So when I've done this with the young women before, they then had a look at the answers to the questions and just sort of.
That's a brilliant idea.
Just see
if I can find
them.
Not sure where they come from.
I know, it's hard.
One of the ones I didn't ask because it was out of the room. It was interesting what other things people do apart from having like sex as intercourse. And then the follow up question was just groping around in the back of the car. I really liked.
Yeah.
There's a whole answer now about groping around.
So the question that I asked Ali about how to get on with your dad, she said, no, not as I mean, me and my dad don't go out for a drink, and I cringe if I see him in the pub because I don't like him knowing that I go to the pub. I know it sounds daft, but I bang into him in pubs, but we always laugh, you know what I mean? He's dead calm. Would you like a drink? Yes. Louise, what are you drinking? I'll have an orange juice, please, Dad. You know, stoned out of my head. I'll have an orange juice, you know what I mean?
Oh, that's brilliant.
So mine that was the one, I mean, did you get any pleasure out of it at the time?
Mm.
The girl has said, we'd been together 7 months, so it was like the final thing, and we never saw each other for a while, but I was never like on cloud nine. Did you get any pleasure out of it at the time? No. And the questionnaire says, I don't think many people do. It's a bit, but what makes me laugh is I made him. He didn't want to. I was a Lolita.
Oh,
Lolita, like young, you know.
Yeah.
Blimey. So that's quite interesting, isn't it? That would be a whole interesting thing.
Yeah,
about,
that's quite shocking.
And I just got to find.
You found a new
this one. Yeah, this one.
Do you feel like you're the lucky one then? Yeah, on a Saturday I can feel like the lucky one, and on a Sunday. I don't feel like the lucky one. It depends. I mean, if I'm going to the christenings or the baby's first birthday party or to the weddings or engagements, then I feel cheesed off. Do you know what I mean? Oh, I don't know that carries. That's page 16. Sorry, I've lost the next bit.
That's an interesting question.
And when we did this at another workshop, that was the bit of all the data where one woman in the workshop went like, yes, that's my life. That is my life right now.
Really?
Like, am I the lucky one that I don't have kids? And again, I think it's like a particular age that you're at where you some days, she's like, so yeah, some days I feel so lucky, and sometimes I feel really sad about the fact that I'm the only one who hasn't. So,
I got so the one about were the things that people told you that you can remember that really weren't right. So, no, I mean, oh, I periods, things like contraception, I've heard of all sorts, like what, jumping up and down on the floor to stop you getting pregnant before or after? and if you miss three pills, then take them all at once. I think we've all heard that one. And actually, I would say that, not I haven't done much sex ed for a few years, but absolutely. All the same things. You won't get pregnant if you have sex standing up. The heart is like, how can we possibly, how can they still be thinking things like this? This is awful.
I've got one. Do you think it's embarrassing to have to bring the subject of contraception up? And she says, I think it would be for some people. I wouldn't be embarrassed. I mean, I've just started another relationship and I've got a question to ask you. Have you? No, I'm not. And he went in and then they get interrupted. That's really annoying. What was she going to say?
So the one we did about, I mean, do you see yourself as a Christian and living by those rules? Said, oh yeah, I don't think, I mean, they say that. It says in the Bible, you don't have to go pray to God. God is everywhere. I believe in that. Sit in bed like, and I don't have to go to church, God, because you're there. I mean, that's what it says in the Bible. You can read the Bible whichever way you want. You can always pick something out that suits you.
That's the way to do it.
I think that was...
I kind of wish that, actually, I think what you did with the students before was really good, and they also want to do this one as well, though.
It's brilliant.
Because it brings up a lot, doesn't it?
When we did it with the drama students, they then created a short scene that just encapsulated something about the experience of doing it. So some of them, like, re-performed them asking themselves, or like one of them did this quite powerful thing where they basically sat in silence in response to the questions because they found the questions really obtrusive and unanswerable, basically. So, but they really showed that really nicely with their and we were talking about when you take questions out of context sometimes, like, they seem outrageous. Some of them, I mean, not actually any of these examples, but there are some examples that just feel like you can't ask that. But like when you take it out of context, but then when you put it back into context, it feels okay. But it's that funny thing about decontextualizing and recontextualizing them.
I like this thing of, you know, acting out somebody else's words, and it's not quite the way that you would phrase things, and it does. You know, I said, like, it felt like my young self is keeps popping up. It feels like that. It feels like talking out these different voices feels like you could, you're sort of bringing someone else. Can't finish my sentence.
Like, you're
it's something about you're bringing them, or you know, you're conjuring this person because you're speaking the words in their cadence or whatever, and then but then also you're sort of conjuring your earlier self in getting your question. Like, I didn't, a lot of these, I wasn't sort of answering from my now self because I was thinking about back then.
It takes you back, I suppose. It's more an emotional connection rather than if you said what, think about when you were 20 or something, that would be different. There's something about doing
exactly.
But there's also something about how the then and the nows, which we've looked at loads in this project, like we did an activity where we did a sort of then-now collage, but how they collapse and how the then always is now, right? Because we only experience the then through the now. So you are your now self, but all of this takes you to your then self, and you just can't. Like, they, it just collapses. So we kind of hold them up there as like a frame to help people time travel, but actually it doesn't really make sense in some ways to do that. Yeah, and that's one of the, so we've like used the kind of like method of like performing them in other projects as well. We've got young people to perform other young people's stories of first sex, for example. And there's one actually from Levantine, a girl
who
made an animated story that she, it's the story from the interview, but it's also her story, and that's why she chose to tell it and why she was interested in it. And so, and I think that's the same for a lot of when you do this, is it's like a way of talking about yourself safely, and a way of articulating a bit of yourself it might be hard to talk about, or you might not know you have permission to talk about. So I think that's one of the nice things about the method.
Yeah, that's a really good way of...
Yeah, we did that in Love and Zoom. At first, we just acted, you know, we just read them through, and they found that really interesting. And in fact, the girls, I'd see what happens at the Proud Trust tonight, but they said they wanted longer interviews so they could... Because at first I just took some extracts, but they said, oh, we want a whole interview that we can really...
Get into it.
Yeah, so I think it'd be interesting to see what's happened tonight. Yeah.